TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. George Galloway, Viva Palestina. TUC Radio Archive. Today is January 23rd, 2024. The war on Gaza still has not ended, not even had another ceasefire to bring desperately needed humanitarian aid. But an international campaign to break the blockade might be inspiring at this time. And here's the audio from a film I made off a talk given by George Galloway in Berkeley, California, in 2009. Israel had waged war on Gaza from December 2008 to January 2009, making more than 100,000 people homeless. Both Israel and Egypt had closed the borders to Gaza, preventing all aid from coming in. Then British Member of Parliament George Galloway broke the siege of Gaza with a 2-mile-long humanitarian aid convoy in early 2009. They entered through the Rafah Gate on the Gaza-Egypt border. The convoy drove in on March 9, 2009, with over 200 vehicles intended for use in Gaza. Among these were a fire engine donated by the British Fire Brigades Union, 12 ambulances, a fishing boat, and trucks full of medicines, tools, clothes, blankets, and gifts for children. The fire engine and boat were stopped at the Rafah Gate, but after some negotiating, the fire engine was allowed in. Sadly, the fishing boat had to be taken back. Maybe Hamas could have started a navy with a boat. At the end of May 2009, the Middle East Children's Alliance in Berkeley, California, held a fundraiser with George Galloway. They invited me to record the event. Here are excerpts from my radio programs. George Galloway is an outspoken member of the British Parliament, serving since first elected in 1987. He's perhaps best known for his support of Palestine and his vigorous campaigns to both overturn economic sanctions against Iraq and to avert the 2003 invasion of that country. He was expelled by Tony Blair from the Labour Party in 2003 for his opposition to what Galloway called the illegal war on Iraq. After participating in daily demonstrations in England during the Israeli assault on Gaza from the end of December 2008 into January 2009, Galloway led a convoy of vehicles loaded with humanitarian aid to Gaza. Under the name Viva Palestina, the convoy began in England in February 2009, crossed from Spain into North Africa, and entered Gaza from Egypt with over 200 vehicles through the Rafah crossing that is usually kept locked by the Egyptian government. Galloway spoke at a benefit of the Middle East Children's Alliance, MECA, in Berkeley, California, on May 20th. He was brought to the stage by MECA founder Barbara Lubin.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Dear, dear comrade Barbara, brothers and sisters, comrades and friends, wassalamu alaikum, peace be on all of you. I'm really honored to be on this platform with my fellow speakers. And so I should make this disclaimer that although my name is George, I have no intention of recolonizing the United States of America. It's not that I want to help recreate the British Empire. I know just how venal that empire was, as all empires are. We once ruled 1/5 of the entire globe. We once ruled and governed 1/4 of the entire world's population from that little building on the River Thames in London in which I sit. Britain had an empire so vast that upon it the sun never set. Though, as my Irish grandfather used to say, that's because God would never trust the British in the dark. He was absolutely right about that. But of course, no discussion of Palestine could begin with anything other than a recitation of the original sin. Britain is the author of the Palestinian tragedy. Britain is the original sinner. Mr. Balfour, the British Foreign Minister, on behalf of one people, promised a second people, who, by the way, represented only a tiny fraction of international Jewry at the time. He promised that second people the land which belonged to a third people. Even by imperialist standards, it was a particularly brazen thing to do, to give away land which not only didn't belong to you, but which you didn't even then occupy. And everything that has happened to the Palestinians has flowed from that division. And here I make, I think, an important point, maybe well known to all of you, but as others will hear this on YouTube and on the radio and so on, it's a point worth making. Mr. Balfour did not make that promise to the Zionists, who, by the way, were to a man atheists, laying no biblical claim to Palestine at all, for those who now, ex post facto, seek to use God as an estate agent, having promised this land to them. They were ready at that time to make their European colonial settler state in many different places. They discussed the Seychelles, Patagonia, Uganda, and other places. They laid no biblical claim to Palestine. Mr. Balfour did not make this promise to them because he liked Jews. In fact, he hated Jews. He was an anti-Semite. He wanted the Jews to leave England and go to Palestine or anywhere else so that he would not have to look upon their faces again. And this is a critically important point. We reject and refuse the idea that Judaism equals Zionism, or that Zionism equals Judaism. We absolutely reject this synonym because it leads in many dark tunnels to many wicked things. Anti-Semitism is racism, pure and simple. Indeed, it is the most virulent strain of racism, because it caused the mass murder, the attempted genocide of millions of Jewish people in Europe during the 1930s and 40s. Many Jews are not Zionists. Most Zionists are not Jews. And anybody who thinks George Bush likes Jews has never visited his golf club. The point is that Zionism presented itself to the British Empire, as it does now to the American Empire, as a means of establishing a European colonial settler state, just like the one in South Africa, just like the one in the then Rhodesia, and in many other places. It's a settler state, pure and simple. And that's why it's possible. Indeed, that's why it's vital that those who wish to see justice for the Palestinian people reach out and find allies amongst Jews in America, in Britain, and around the world, including, by the way, in Israel. And don't think it's not possible. There are many Jews in this audience, indeed organizing this meeting. I'm one of the few people on the left who was able to spend significant time in South Africa under apartheid. I was sent there by the African National Congress undercover to do important political work. And every house in which I slept, every car in which I traveled, Every dinner I ate and every rand I spent was given to me by Jewish members of the African National Congress, most of them communists, by the way. Now, these people were Jews, but they were with liberation and against apartheid. And we have to win the argument here in this country with Jews that Israel is an apartheid state, just like apartheid South Africa was. Now, Barbara, in her introduction, was making the point that it's necessary to demonstrate, that it's necessary to put feet on the streets, people on the streets, to show what it is that we are fighting for. And that's where I want to start the main burden of my remarks this evening. Because we were demonstrating on the 10th of January of this year in London, 100,000 of us marching through the streets of London, heading for the Israeli embassy in Kensington, which we did every day, every night, every weekend during the 22-day aggression against the Gaza Strip. And the snow was falling, the night was falling, as I began to think about what I was going to say on the platform at the end of the march. And it struck me that whilst demonstrating was necessary, it was not sufficient. That it was important to protest, but it was not sufficient to protest. That we had to do something practical to come to the relief of the people who were suffering this atrocity in front of our eyes. And we were able to see that atrocity, by the way, in a way which we had not been able to see previous crimes committed against the Palestinian people. You see, we're no longer, as tonight proves, look at all these cameras and microphones, all these radio stations, employing some of the best people in this land and talking to some of the best people in this land on a daily basis. And as Barbara said, it's crucial to keep those voices going. But we knew what was happening in Gaza because we're no longer dependent on Rupert Murdoch and Fox News and the Bush and Blair Corporation, which used to be known as the BBC, because we have access now to pictures and to information through the internet, through all these new digital channels. And because we were able to watch, we were able to see the scale of the brutality which was being visited upon a captive and overwhelmingly civilian population. This is an important point to make when people bandy words around like terror and terrorism. The Palestinians in Gaza have no air force. They have no navy. They have no anti-aircraft weapons. They have homemade rockets that go up in the air and nobody knows where they'll land. Militarily, completely ineffectual. The overwhelming point about the 22 days that we witnessed is that it was a practically, to all practical purposes, defenseless population that was being assailed in that brutal way. And worse, in most other conflicts, civilian people can flee, can run away from the bombardment, can hide. But the people doing the bombardment of Gaza had taken the precaution of locking all the doors so that there was nowhere for the people to hide, nowhere for the people to run. And what a bombardment it was. I'd like to spend a moment talking about the use of white phosphorus gas. Imagine a state calling itself, though we don't accept it, the Jewish state, dropping gas on civilian people. Can there be anything more obscene? Country that calls itself the only democracy in the Middle East, and we'll come back to that, dropping gas on civilians that they've locked up in a huge concentration camp, and we saw it happening live on TV. Now, as it happens, I'm a bit of an expert on white phosphorus. I spent the best years of my life from 1977 until the day of his death in Paris at the side of my late comrade, President Yasser Arafat. I was with him in Beirut in 1982 when Israel invaded, not for the first or the last time, and advanced on Beirut and began systematically to reduce an Arab capital city to rubble and ash. And it was there that they used for the first time white phosphorus as a weapon. And I personally visited the hospitals and saw children who were victims of the use of this phosphorus gas. I watched as white smoke came from their noses and their mouths. Because you see, once you breathe this phosphorus, you can never breathe it out until you're dead. Because its purpose, when inhaled, when ingested, is to cook the victim from the inside, to bake the people to death who have ingested it. And I watched them die. That was in 1982, but we didn't see it dropping live on television then. We did see it dropping from the 27th of December last and for 22 days. And we saw it actually dropping on United Nations compounds, United Nations schools and warehouses and other clinics and other United Nations installations. And I ask you this. I ask myself, because I really don't know the answer, how can it be that a country like Israel can continue to be a member of the United Nations when it's killing United Nations staff and bombing with phosphorus gas United Nations buildings?
You're listening to an archival program with the British former Member of Parliament, George Galloway. He now is host of the weekly radio and TV show Moeds. I recorded him on May 20th, 2009, reporting on an extraordinary international campaign, Viva Palestina, to bring aid to Palestinians after the December 2008 to January 2009 war on Gaza by Israel.
And so as I spoke to that rally on the 10th of January, I announced that we would lead a new organization. Was born that day. Viva Palestina would lead a convoy from England to Gaza, which we did on the 14th of February. 110 British vehicles, 300 British people, citizens, flying the British flag and the Palestinian flag and carrying $2 million worth of aid all the way from London to Gaza. And we left on St. Valentine's Day. It was a long and difficult journey. We traveled 8,000 kilometers across 8 countries, across seas, and through many difficult days. We traveled through France, through Spain. We crossed by ferry to Morocco. We discovered that the border between Morocco and Algeria was locked. It had been locked for 16 years. Imagine, crystallizing the tragic division of the Arab world. Moroccans and Algerians look the same, sound the same, eat the same, sing the same, read the same. They are the same people, and their border is not only extant after all this time, but is actually locked shut. In fact, it's opened only twice in 16 years, both times for me. In 1999, to take a convoy to Baghdad, and in 2009 to allow our convoy through to Palestine. No one actually knows why this border is locked, but they needed a blowtorch. They needed fire, flames, to open the border because it had rusted shut, not having been opened since 1999 when I last passed through it. And somehow that crystallized the great tragedy of the Arab world, divided by Mr. Sykes and Mr. Picot, the English and French colonial masters who invented all these phony, fake Arab states in the first place, dividing the Arabs into many states, the better to rob them of their things. And we traveled across the whole of North Africa. The governments there, most of them, indeed all of them but one. It's important to say this, not because I support the political system in Libya, I don't, but the Libyan government was the only government that really welcomed this convoy, and the only place where the people and the government did everything they could to make it a success. But we passed through all these North African countries. The governments had to pretend to welcome us. The Prime Minister of Tunisia invited me to call upon him in Prime Minister's house, but only for the photo call. The meeting lasted exactly 5 minutes, and he did not say a single word. I had to fill the entire 5 minutes myself, just so it could appear on the television in Tunisia that the Prime Minister had received me. But behind the scenes, their government, like the others, hurried us through their territory as quickly as they could. They found desert roads that no one appeared to know about, that weren't even on maps, in order to keep us away from the population of their countries. But I'll tell you something. All the soldiers and all the policemen in all of North Africa could not keep the population away from our convoy. They forced their way through the police, through the soldiers, to touch the convoy. Women were taking off their wedding rings and forcing them through the windows of our convoy, begging us to take them to Gaza. People were forcing biscuits, medicine, food, clothes on board our vehicles. They were begging us to take them to Gaza. One old man, an agricultural laborer, Fellahin, in Algeria, he begged me to take him in the back of my own vehicle to Gaza. I told him, I sleep in the back of this vehicle. There is no room. What do you want to do there, I said. He said, I want them to know that when they bleed, we bleed. When they cry, we cry. And that they're in our minds day and night in this terrible trial. A poor old man in Algeria speaking for the whole Arab world, from the Atlantic to the Gulf, from Marrakesh to Bahrain. The governments, of course, are another thing. We arrived in Egypt, across the Libyan border, not with 110 vehicles, but now 220 vehicles, because Libya asked how many you have. I said 110. They said you now have 220. They doubled the size of the convoy. By the time we crossed into Egypt, this convoy was more than 2 miles long. Quite a demonstration of solidarity, which was its intention. The problem is not the Israeli assault. The problem is the siege. That's the real problem that's killing the Palestinian people. And let's analyze that siege. I told you earlier, I was all my life with Arafat, and I'm still with his line today. I'm not a supporter of Hamas. I've never been a supporter of Hamas. But I am a supporter of democracy. And the only people entitled to choose the government of Palestine are the Palestinian people themselves, nobody else. This siege is the one that has to be broken. And I promised the Palestinian people in Gaza that I would come to the United States of America and I would organize a convoy of hundreds of American vehicles flying American flags, and that they too would break the siege of Gaza. They too would drive through this checkpoint at Rafah. The aid will be handed to non-government organizations, charities, churches, universities, hospitals, impeccable, non-political recipients of a humanitarian aid convoy. I believe that this is an important turning point. That if American policy towards that region remains the same, then nothing will change in relation to America's problems in the world. Because Palestine is the heart of the matter. Palestine is the key to the crisis between the West and the East. It's the key to the crisis between the Muslim world and the non-Muslim world. And heaven knows, in your country and in mine, we ourselves have also now begun paying a price for that crisis. Because that swamp of hatred that's out there, in which many horrors are developing, will be filled, not drained, if US policy remains the same towards this question. And all we are asking for is an American government to pursue a policy in the interests of the people of the United States of America towards the Middle East. That's all. We're asking for a policy in the interests of the people of the United States rather than the exploiters and the arms manufacturers and the occupiers of Palestinian land. That's the change that we are asking for. And I promise you, if we can make that change, then the hatred of your country and mine, which has been growing and has been mutating in that swamp these last years, will begin to diminish. So, there can be no peace without justice. No justice, no peace. It's a very simple slogan. And the beginning of that justice is to lift the siege on Gaza. So, I've come to the end of the time I have. Salaamu Alaikum. Thank you very much.
That was George Galloway speaking in Berkeley, California in May 2009 at a benefit for the Middle East Children's Alliance. He gave a report about the Viva Palestina aid convoy that he had led from London to Gaza in February and March of 2009. And he announced the next convoy, this one from the U.S., beginning on July 4, 2009. That convoy arrived at the Rafah gates on July 17, 2009. You heard excerpts from a one-hour radio program and film on humanitarian aid to Gaza, recorded on May 20th, 2009. Viva Palestina! You can hear this program again on TUC Radio's website, www.tucradio.org. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening.